Good morning, boys and girls. Is it morning where you're listening to this? It may be the afternoon, for all that matter. I keep forgetting that this is on iTunes, and people can listen to it at any time during the day. But it's morning for me right now. My name is Paul Nichols, and I'm your host. You're listening to It's Your Money, the podcast that pulls back the curtain on the financial services industry and exposes the truth about money and investing. We believe that education and understanding leads to clarity. Clarity can lead to confidence, and confidence is the major component in achieving peace of mind. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, peace of mind over your investments, the elusive peace of mind, is attainable with education. You don't know what you don't know. And often, let me ask you something, if what you thought to be true as it relates to how you're planning your retirement or investing turned out not to be, when would you want to know? And, you know, I have to compliment you by even listening to this podcast, because that obviously speaks to your desire to want to learn more. And if things turned out to be not the way that you've been planning for them, or what you thought to be true turned out not to be, when would you want to know? Well, most people would say immediately. Then the question is, well, if you knew, would you make the appropriate changes, whatever those may be? And that's the interesting. That's where the investor dilemma comes in. But my name is Paul Nichols. Again, I'm the investor coach. This podcast comes to you from Central Pennsylvania, or Pennsyltucky, as I joke with my wife. I am the president of Financial Abundance, a registered investment advisory firm registered with the state of Pennsylvania, and we do business in various states around the country. I used to have a syndicated radio show. I gave that up a few months back because of my growing family and the pulls and tugs of my practice and my need to be in other places in order to sustain the quality of service that we want to deliver to our clients. And also, I was the investor coach for NBC, and I gave that up as well. Boy, I'll tell you something. Media takes a lot of time. But doing this podcast doesn't take that much time, and I'm the kind of guy that likes to talk and express myself, so this is a wonderful format that gives me my weekly fix, if you will. So starting this week, I'm going to make a commitment to you listeners that every Monday I'm going to come on and give you a market update. We're going to change our format a little bit, and we're going to give you a market update every week, which is a good overview of what's going on in the market year to date. And then I'm going to pick up on a topic, a little topic, and to share a couple thoughts with you. And hopefully these thoughts, comments, notes can in some way enrich your life, which is the intent of our podcast. We believe that education leads to clarity. Clarity leads to confidence. So we're going to start with the market update this week. Now, this is as of October 15th, 2010, business close. October 15th, 2010. So what I'd like to do is go through the market update. We believe that the market is efficient, that the price of goods and services are dictated by the free market. We believe in modern portfolio theory. We believe in applying the academic science of the last 50 years to investing. And as a result, we believe that the market's efficient, and you can't beat the market, but you want to own the entire marketplace. That would include cash, bonds, small companies, large companies, value companies, growth companies, international companies, emerging markets, developed markets. We believe the market's efficient, and according to modern portfolio theory, William Sharpe, Merton Miller, and Harry Markowitz, who won the Nobel Prize in 1990, it's not really about when you buy a stock, and it's not really about what stock you buy. It's how does those stocks that you own relate to all the other stocks that you have, the concept of dissimilar price movement. So we just don't want to own large companies, because large may not be the hot asset class this year. And asset classes are basically, think of having a number of baskets that are sitting in a larger basket. And in each of the smaller baskets, you're going to have eggs or stocks of the same type. So you'd have small stocks and large stocks and value stocks and growth stocks, etc. So whatever happens in the market, you have eggs that are up. Now, you also have eggs that are down, respectively. You're not going to be up in all areas or down in all areas. Hey, even in 2008, cash was up, although the rest of the market was down. The idea is, we believe the market is efficient, and we want to get what the market will bear. And in some years, ladies and gentlemen, that is a bear market, unfortunately. But listen, I know you all love volatility out there. when it's up, right? Of course, we don't like volatility when it's down, but the stock market is like going up a flight of stairs with the yo-yo. It's always gone up and down. It's always been volatile, but it's always gone up over time. So I believe that it would be prudent to be a prudent investor. It would be prudent to make sure that whatever the indexes growth or yield is, whether that be positive or negative, that we own all of it. So, for example, we want to own small companies. That would be measured in our global society by the Russell 2500 Index, which measures the performance of small to mid-cap companies. Now, by the way, in most of the portfolios that I analyze, including the top mutual funds that are sold in this country, it is rare to find very much small in most of those portfolios. And what's interesting is small has always been a smoking asset class. I shouldn't say always, that wouldn't be correct. Is often higher than large as it relates to yield. So the Russell 2500 Index measures the performance of small to mid-cap companies. And year to date, as of October 15th, that would be 14%, which is very good year to date. I mean, that's smoking. Okay, let's go to the Russell 2000, which is a measurement of small to micro companies, and that's about 13%, 13.5%. So obviously small, ladies and gentlemen, is doing extremely well up to this point in the year for October 2010. Let's move on to the small cap value. Okay, so I just mentioned growth companies, growth and micro growth areas. That's 14 and 13.5 respectively, the Russell 2500, Russell 2000. But the Russell 2000 value measures the performance of small cap companies in the United States. And that's up 12.3. Man, it is happy. This is a happy market update, ladies and gentlemen. We have double digits. Now, it wouldn't be happy for the fella or the lady that doesn't have Russell 2500, Russell 2000, or if you don't have small value or growth companies, well, then you're not catching this right now. You're not catching everything that's up. Let's take a trip down to see the Russell 1000 value, which measures large companies, large versus small. Large would be much larger capitalization. Small would be below 5 million generally in capitalization. That's how in value, okay? Russell 1000 value is about 7.6. And then the S&P 500, which measure U.S. large companies predominantly, is about 7.1. So, interesting little side note. As of October 15th, 2010, in the small arena, we are 12 to 14%. In the large companies in the U.S., we're about 7 to 7.5%. And ladies and gentlemen, that's where I see most people's investment, in U.S. large. So I hope that you have a well-diversified portfolio, not just by name, ladies and gentlemen, but by actual holdings inside. If so, you should be a very happy camper at this point in the year. Let's go on to international, which is measured by the Morgan Stanley Capital International World Index. That's one index. That would be well-developed markets. These would be countries like Australia, Austria, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Sweden, the UK, for example. Year-to-date, that's actually the lagging asset class is the developed and the Europe, Australia, Far East indexes. About 4.7 for the developed, and for the Europe, Australia, and Far East, which is everything but U.S. and Canada, it's about 3.1. So our lagging asset class as of October 15th is the Morgan Stanley Capital International Europe, Australia, and Far East, or the EFA index, followed up by the developed. Now, emerging markets is different. Emerging markets index, according to Morgan Stanley Capital International, is about 13.3, which is smoking. So here's the bottom line. For October 15th, the middle of the month, we're beginning the fourth quarter, or into the fourth quarter, what we basically have is an unbelievably smoking year-to-date, double-digit returns in small value emerging markets. The lagging are really the U.S. large and U.S. international, which unfortunately is where most people have their money, because most managers seem to keep a heavy weighting of U.S. large in their portfolios. If you've never had anyone analyze your portfolio objectively and independently, that's something we can do for you. And I normally don't do commercials here. We do charge a fee for that because it is independent and objective. If you would like to learn more about opportunities to do that, you can either go to Financial Abundance, Inc., or just Google Financial Abundance and go to our website, and you can ask the coach and start some communication with us that way. Or you can just dial us directly. Toll-free, 866-867-5745. That's 866-867-5745. Just call in and talk to Rick, and Rick will get you set up with a brief conversation with me on the phone, and we'll see if we can be of a mutual benefit to one another. So, basically, ladies and gentlemen, the market update for the middle of October is basically, yay, team, rock on. I love volatility when it's up. I don't like it when it's down. But as an average, even if you include the lagging indicators of large international and large U.S., we still have a very respective, close to double-digit return for the year. Yay, team. And you know, the rule of 72 simply says, for those of you who've never heard, the rule of 72, it's just a little mathematical ditty that you can do in your head that basically gives you an idea of how long it takes money to double in time. So, for example, if you were getting 7.2% in your portfolio, 7.2 into 72 would mean every 10 years your money is going to double. Now, on the other end, if you were getting 9% in your portfolio, 9 into 72 is about 8 times. So every 8 years, your money should double. But unfortunately, what I see is the gross returns that you're reported might be in the 9, 10, 11, 12%, but those are gross. That's not net. That's gross before fees, not after fees. And the fact of the matter is most people's money's not doubling every 7, 8, or 9, 10 years. It's doubling in about every 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 years, which tells me most people aren't getting 7, 8, 9%, 10% in their whole portfolio, maybe in a piece of it, but not as a whole. So it's important to understand the concept of diversification, modern portfolio theory, the efficient market hypothesis, the three-factor model. Go to our website, Financial Abundance. There's a plethora. Yes, I got to use the word plethora today, a plethora of information on our website. There's 3 years worth of radio shows. There's a year's worth of video coaching and bonus coaching that we did for NBC. Ladies and gentlemen, there is a plethora, yes, I got to use it again, plethora of information on our website as it relates to an academic approach to investing, and we're an email away. So with that being said, let's slide on to my couple comments. That's the market update for this week. If I may just spend a couple minutes with you, and I'm going to share something with you I ran across this week that I thought was interesting. And at the same time, a little bit concerning, as it is interesting to me, maybe not to you, but interesting to me. And that was something that I noticed in today's, October 18th, Monday, October 18th, in today's USA Money section. And it is the little USA Today snapshots they throw down in the lower corner of the page with the little cool graphs. And this question was a little poll they had done. This is Northwestern Mutual Survey of 1,057 adults over 18. And the question was, what was your best financial decision ever? Well, 31% came in with the first most popular, and that was started saving early, which we all try to do. We all have good intentions, but you've heard that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. But, you know, stuff happens. We try to save. Sometimes we gotta slim down on the rationalizing that we do. You know, the rationalize, the justification to spend money because we deserve it sometimes. And for some of you on the other end of that spectrum, you need to cut loose and break down and go out and spend a little money. Enjoy the journey, please, as you go along. You never know when it might end. You know, my grandfather always says, he's 93 years old, today's the first day of the rest of your life. It matters not what has happened to you before today. Hopefully you've learned and gained some experience, but the good things we can remember, the bad things we can hopefully make us stronger. What kills you, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. That's what my wife tells me all the time. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Anyway, what was your best financial decision ever? The second most commonly answered was they bought real estate at a favorable price. The third most popular was they made sure that their family was protected. So what was your best financial decision? Starting early, buying real estate, and ensuring your family's protected. The fourth one was bought products with some guarantees, such as insurance. So about 10% of the people believe that was the best decision they ever made because of the guarantees, and I would probably stand in that camp. And then the last one was relied heavily on my 401k, but a very small percentage, about 7%. Of course, if you've heard any of my teachings as it relates to 401k plans, I only believe most Americans should put in up to what their company will match, and then outside of that, tried to find a tax advantaged alternative, and I don't mean IRA. See, one of the things, when I ask people why you put money in your IRA, they often say, to save taxes, Paul. And I say, what do you mean? Well, I'm going to save on my tax bill this year. Well, that's true because you've deferred the tax, right? Well, when you defer the tax, what else do you do? That's right, ladies and gentlemen, you defer the tax calculation. So we're not really going to know until hindsight whether or not it made sense to defer that tax calculation. But if you're like most people that I deal with and that I see, which is hundreds every year, probably close to thousands, certainly thousands that I talk to, I will tell you that most people that I see are going to be in a higher or the same tax bracket after retirement because they followed the rules, and that was putting money away, paying off their house, and basically they're at a point in their life where they have more income and literally no deductions. And I don't agree with this 80% rule. You're going to retire on 80% of what you're living on now. If that's what your advisor is encouraging you to do, I think I would encourage you to consider firing that person and finding someone who is not just following the herd, that's actually using their brain and thinking about the consequences in the end game rather than just a parrot for the large institutions. Oh my goodness, did I go off on a rant there? I did go off on a rant. I apologize for that. But the reason that I wanted to bring up these statistics was I found some other statistics that I found to be very interesting. I didn't know how I was going to use these, but this is a great opportunity to do that. And that was this. What was the best financial decision you ever made? Most people said saving real estate, protecting their family, buying insurance with guarantees, and relying on their 401k. And I think all that makes good sense. But what I note and what I am concerned about is this statistic, which I picked up from the National Consumer Survey on Personal Finance. This was in 2009. And also from the Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards in September of 2009, was that 67% of consumers do not have a written financial plan. And what's really scary is 54% of Americans do not have a financial advisor or even an insurance agent. And this is amongst those with college degrees. This is not including those who have not taken advantage of college. This is those with college degrees. That's a scary statistic, ladies and gentlemen. When you figure how much time you and your spouse, or if you're single or whatever, dual income or single income, how much time you and your spouse spend chasing money and trying to secure your financial future. I would submit to you, barring sleeping, we spend as much or more time chasing money than we do anything else. But how little time do we really go out and get professional advice? You see, for many years, people like my parents believed that financial advice was a luxury of the rich. Ladies and gentlemen, it is an absolute necessity for all. Because when we start to look at the lack of financial literacy in this country, it's rampant. And I know that because we teach at a number of universities courses that are always popular. They've been popular for years. The evaluations are always high because people just aren't getting this information. And then when I look at Generation Y, as in yellow, Generation Y, which is ages 19 to 27, and this group only accounts for 5% of advisors' client base, that tells me very few people in their 20s are getting much coaching or financial literacy. And then when I look at the fact that over half of those people are 60% of the debt in that group is credit card debt, we've got serious issues. And then when we take it a step further to the X generation, or the ages 28 to 39, this group has 67% credit card debt. So financial planning, ladies and gentlemen, is not a luxury of the rich. Let me encourage, regardless whatever age you are, in your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, it makes no difference to me. It's never too late to begin. This is the first day for the rest of your life. You need to learn some basics. You don't need to know everything. You just need to know the few right things. And it can start with searching the website for certain material. Now, you need to make sure that's the challenge. Oftentimes, we get information overload, and we don't know whether the information is credible or not. But I will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, if what you're doing doesn't make sense, it doesn't make sense. And, you know, look, if it quacks like a duck and it walks like a duck, it's a duck, okay? You'll find that most of the strategies in retirement planning, most of the things that most of us should be doing with our money make very good sense. And if it's too good to be true, there's a good chance that it is if there's not a reason to explain that advantage. And you got to be very careful about some of the guarantees that you're offered in the financial industry. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to see them in print. If somebody tells you a guarantee of some kind, let them show it to you in print, and on top of that, a very detailed explanation of that, because we don't want a little piece that paints a story. We want to know the whole story. I believe in the 11th commandment, and that is, thou shalt not fake thyself out. And if you do, shame on you. Plan for the worst, hope for the best. Get some professional advice, will you? Whether it be reaching out to us or someone local, or if you want us to help you find someone local or whatever. Get some quality, competent, not just relationship-oriented, competent. Look, as it relates to relationship, ladies and gentlemen, I really don't care whether I have a relationship with my professional advisors. I just want to know they're competent. In fact, I'll be candid with you. I don't really care for my accountant at all. But they're competent, and I'm going to continue to work with them. I would never go out and have a cocktail with them. Our families would never go to a baseball game or anything like that, okay? But and I really don't care for the man at all, but they're competent. So to me, it's important. Let's not let emotion skew the logic and what's best for us moving forward. Well, that's my thoughts for today. I hope this finds you well. You're listening to It's Your Money, the financial podcast that pulls back the curtain on the industry and exposes the truth about money and investing. What's behind the curtain? Well, listen to some more of our podcasts and you'll find out more about what's behind the curtain. I'm known as the Investor Coach locally, Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. In fact, you can Google Investor Coach and I'll pop right up in the first page. My name again is Paul Nichols. If you'd like to learn about what we do here at Financial Abundance or learn more about an academic and educational approach toward investing and retirement planning and income planning and all the different areas that make up a prudent retirement or investment plan, please check out our website. There's a lot of information there. Or give our office a call, 866-867-5745. This is Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. You don't need to know everything if you have a coach teaching you the few right things. Hope this finds you well. Have a super-duper day. We'll talk to you next week.